Konzo Martin joins us on Sports Byline, head basketball coach at the University of California. In high school, he played alongside LaFonso Ellis, and he also played on two state championship teams for Lincoln High in East St. Louis, Illinois. Now, I want to start there for a moment because I spent some time with Jackie Joyner-Kiersey, and she, of course, grew up there as well. And she used to take me back and tell me what it was like in East St. Louis, because a lot of people don't realize what that town is like. It was a tough town.
It's a tough town when you're removed from it. I grew up in East St. Louis, and when you're a young kid and living there, you don't realize that it's tough because that's your home environment, and everything around you seems at peace. And even though you see things, you hear things, but when you remove yourself, when I went off to Purdue as a freshman in college, and all of a sudden 2 years later, I started thinking back, like, man, that was a tough environment, but it was a great environment for me, and I love East St. Louis, and I love everything it did for me as a young man. And speaking of Jackie Joyner-Kiersey, I keep in touch with her all the time. Jackie's a little older than I am, but I grew up with her sister. We were the same age. And Jackie just sent me a text, 2 days ago, just congratulating. But we stay in touch, and she's done a tremendous job in helping rebuild, and do a lot of things in East St. Louis, Illinois.
She told me one time, I said, did you ever fear about getting in trouble with the police? And she said, no, because I knew the punishment would be better or worse with my parents than it would ever be with anything the police could do. I mean, it was that type of situation with her and other kids there, too, I understand.
I mean, that's true, but the one thing about being in an area like that, even though you have tough times and tough situations and the economy is not as great often, but what you do have, you have a tremendous amount of family and the atmosphere is great. Everybody wants to see everybody be successful, even though you have situations that take place outside of that. But I think 80-90% of the time, people want to see each other be successful. And with that being said, when you're talking about police officers and people in the community of status, everybody's your parent when you're outside of your own home. I mean, we kind of parent each other and make sure the kid's doing the right things in life. So, it's just one big family in East St. Louis.
One of the things I've heard from a lot of players that came from inner urban areas is that if you had a particular talent like playing basketball or even football, that the other elements of the community would almost protect you a little bit so that you didn't go down the wrong path in any particular way. Was that the same way there?
Oh, without a doubt. And then for me growing up, my two sports were baseball and basketball. And what happens when the older guys and the guys, living in their world, doing their certain things, they would always make sure you stay out of harm's way. And anything you needed, shoes, whatever you need, we'll take care of. You don't need to be doing this. You need to focus on what you're doing. And again, areas like that, they get such a bad rap. And there are tough things that takes place. But a lot of the older guys that are maybe hooked on drugs, now doing time in prison, they did a good job of keeping young men and women out of harm's way to say, stay away from this. Even though I'm doing this, you don't need to be doing this. And I credit a lot of guys that, some not here today, but they helped me stay on a straight and narrow path.
Let me paint a picture for you. Summertime, East St. Louis, playground, hard top, 90 degrees, 95% relative humidity, 5 shirts, 5 skins. Tell me about those games.
Oh, great games. Now, it took some time for me to get on the court now. You had older guys in those areas. You had one court, and you probably had, three or four different project housings that are playing on that one court. So that's a tremendous amount of competition. So I think for me, I started to get an opportunity to play with the big boys, so to speak, when I was probably 15 years old to be in those games. Not that they let me shoot a lot of balls, but you had to play a role. Then all of a sudden, a year later, 2 years later, you become one of the guys. And you kind of find your way at that point. Then you get really a lot of respect around the city when that happens. But again, as a young guy, I don't care how talented you are. You have to find your way. You have to fight for your right. I mean, I remember getting pushed around by a lot of older guys in a good way, but I couldn't go home and say, Mom, this happened. I mean, you did that, you were done. You couldn't go back and play, so you had to deal with that, and it made you tougher. It made you mentally stronger.
What's the definition of a foul in a playground game? Bleeding?
Well, if you're able to get up and walk away, you're okay. I mean, that's the biggest thing, but no, there was no call. You could make calls because, again, that was the environment, that was the culture, that's what it was. There was no complaint, no excuses. And, the thing about the downside about that, the older guys were kind of like the father figures, even though they might be 5-6 years older because, probably 75% of the guys in our project housing, some dads were around, but most cases they didn't live with them. So those older guys, they became kind of your father figures in the neighborhood. They kept you out of harm's way, and they would punch you in the chest if they needed to, smack you across the head if they needed to. But it was part of it. You didn't complain about it. You didn't think there was something wrong with that because in the end, they wanted to see you successful. Even though they had their own tactics of going about it, they wanted to see you successful.
Who were some of the legends on your playground courts?
Well, yeah, obviously, you know, well, Jackie, she didn't play as much. Now, she was a good basketball player. But she didn't play as when we were coming up. She was a little bit older. But LaFonso Ellis, who played at Notre Dame, was my high school teammate. Darius Miles, who's a lot younger, my high school teammate. Tyrone Jackson. There are a lot of great names of guys that, you know, in that area, they're legends when it comes to their names. But most of those guys, you know, some of them went to college, but a lot of those guys were kind of local legends. And, you know, certain things took place in their lives. But LaFonso Ellis is probably the biggest name that you would think of, and he's working with ESPN as we speak.
You know, Helicopter Herman was a legend back in New York, and I asked Al Addles one time why that the legends on the playgrounds didn't make it higher in professional basketball. And he told me something, and I want to get your take on this. He said they couldn't play system basketball, that they were great, you know, styling their game and everything, but they couldn't really melt it down into system basketball. Was that a good statement to make?
Well, I think it's a fair statement, but I think it's a little more to that because what happens back then, I'll say back then, now today it's a little different, but back then you didn't understand what it meant to be a professional, because here I am, if I'm in the streets of East St. Louis and I've seen this with my own two eyes, guys with duffel bags full of money, and the professional ranks, Michael Jordan's best years, I think at one point he might have been at $2.3 million. So you figure the best of the game making that kind of money. When I'm seeing duffel bags of $100,000 every other day, every 2 weeks, what do I need to be a professional player for when I see this kind of money? As opposed to the money that they make nowadays, there's a true vision. Back then when I was growing up, you talked about being a professional player just because it was a thing to say. And for us, it was the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team, because we didn't have a professional team around that area. And baseball was big, but really, I think I don't know if necessarily the intellect really, because you have young men today still struggle with the knowledge of the game, but they're talented. I just think back in those days, there was no, like when I was growing up, I couldn't tell you 10 years from now I think I'd be doing this. If I didn't say an NBA player, then I don't know what I could have said, you know, outside of being a police officer or a school teacher, because there was no real vision to say 20 years from now you could, because in East St. Louis there's not a lot of industries and companies where you can make a lot of wealth and be successful. You had to go outside of the city, and really going outside of the city, that means getting on a bus and going. What, I was comfortable in my environment, so why do I need to go out of East St. Louis outside of going over the bridge to St. Louis, Missouri, which is only a minute drive over the bridge? That was a distance.
Gene Katie, tell me about the first time you met him.
Well, the first time I met Coach Katie, when you see his face, he looked tough, he looked mean, but Coach is a wonderful man. He's a good man. He was a great leader, a great teacher. Oftentimes people come up to me and say, man, Coach was tough, he was mean. Now, he was tough, but he wasn't mean.
But he was fair, too.
Oh, very fair.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
And the thing about it, Coach always said, if you play hard, you'll play. If you go to class, you'll get a degree. Coach never made promises. He was one of those guys, he wanted you to play as hard as you can play all the time. Try to go to class every day. Try your best every day. One of those type of guys. And he always taught, as great of a teacher he was when it came to basketball, I think he was a better teacher when it came to life skills. And some of those things is what I needed, too, as a young man growing up. And it really helped me in a lot of ways. But Coach is a good man. He really was.
Could you have gone to any other school where you recruited heavily?
Yes. Oh, yeah. There was a lot of places. I really wanted to go to Illinois coming out of high school. But around that time, they got in some NCAA trouble with the, I don't know if you remember, the Deion Thomas, the
right.
Phone call and all that. Yeah. So that's where I really wanted to go. And then what happened was they were talking about Illinois might get NCAA probation and might get the death penalty. You know, when you're a young guy, you know, 18 years old, you hear that. It's like, man, I don't want to go to school. That wish that was my dream school. So for me, it came down to Connecticut and Purdue. And I think both coaches were great teachers, tough-minded guy. Jim Calhoun at Connecticut, hard-nosed guys. And for me, Purdue was the place to be, and it turned out to be a great move for me.
Well, we have 1 minute before we have to break. When I think about Gene Katie, as you said, he was always straight up with everybody. What's the best piece of advice he ever gave you when you were with him?
Well, a couple of things. One of the things he said, try your best to go to class every day. He said, if you go to class every day, it's almost as if you put $100 into your bank account. He said, if you miss class, you're taking $1,000 out of your bank account. And the other thing he always said, just try your best every day. Don't make excuses.
I think also when I think about him is the fact that he understood the game so well that he could communicate it. And I think that the players really connected to what he had to say. Sometimes players will tune out coaches. Am I correct in that?
Oh, yeah, coach is a great teacher. Now, the one thing coach did, now, if you weren't mentally strong, he was the guy that defined your role. See, oftentimes we don't like to talk about what's your role. Everybody's afraid to talk about their role because that's really what helps the success of the team. Coach would define your role. Whether you like that role or not, the role was meant for the betterment of the team, not you as an individual. Now, if you wanted to do more, then you need to work in the offseason and the summertime to get better at it. But for right now, in order for us to be successful as a team here at Purdue University, these are the things you need to do. And I think for me, I struggled with that initially. Like my freshman year, and I was one of the better high school players in America, he just said set screens and rebound. Now, my first college game, I might have set 200 screens. But coach said do it. I did it.
Konzo Martin is with us, fine basketball coach, head basketball coach at the University of California. We'll talk more about his career at Purdue and also getting into coaching. We do that as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline. Konzo Martin has joined us here on Sports Byline USA. We're talking about his career and also his playing career and also about his coaching career. You went to Purdue, and everybody says that the Big Ten has a particular image. And you think about the SEC, you think about the ACC. Tell me a little bit about what that Big Ten image was when it came to basketball.
It was tough. It was physical. Again, I say it was tough and it was physical when I was removed from it. But for me, that's all I knew, the tough, hard-nosed, physical brand of basketball. And Big Ten was my style of play coming from East St. Louis. But more than that, I needed Coach Katie to continue my growth from a young man into a man because my high school coach, Benny Lewis, was a tough, hard-nosed guy. Then playing for Coach Katie, so the transition for me was great. But physical league, and I went into college, I was 180 pounds as a freshman, and I was playing the wing position, and I got beat up. That next year, I was 215 pounds, and I couldn't let that happen again because I don't care how tough you are. I think you're as tough as you are. Physical part, it was just hard for me to overcome. And that next year, I said, I'll never get pushed around. I remember the guys vividly as a freshman that pushed me around. I mean, some of the guys weren't great players, but they were so strong and you just couldn't match it. But I learned some valuable lessons in the Big Ten.
You had a pretty good teammate in Glenn Robinson, did you not?
Big time. He was big time. He's probably the best player that I've ever played with. Of course, I've played with, but also watching him play live. Now, I was on the floor in the NBA with Michael Jordan, all those guys. But around the guy on a regular basis, Glenn Robinson, he practiced like it was a game. You know, a lot of people talk about it all the time. We would play right now we play one-on-one games all the time. We would get up into the thousands, but we never stop the game. We just keep going and going and going. And I'm not exaggerating. Sometimes it's 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, Friday, Saturday night. We're playing. He loved to play the game. He loved to compete. He was a competitor. He's a big-time scorer, but he was a guy, quick first step, 6'8", could shoot the three ball, pull-up game, jab step, and was tough as nails. And I think that's what made him great because he could score, but he was tough.
I know what the schedule is like, especially in the wintertime when you're going to Iowa, when you're going to Ohio. You're laughing, so you know what I'm talking about. Because I went to high school in Rantoul, Illinois, just north of Champaign-Urbana. Yeah. So we know what we're talking about here. But how tough was it with the travel and basketball, how tough was it to have academic and athletic balance?
Well, for me, and just like Glenn, it was tough for us. Because there was a lot of things we had to play catch on when we went to college. So some things I need to get better at when I stepped on a college campus. So the tutors, the mentors, all that, we needed that in a grade. And I say we because we were roommates, and I saw it firsthand with Glenn, and we really had to apply ourselves and spend a lot of hours with tutors and mentors and making sure we got it done in the classroom and just managing your schedule, all this stuff. And it helped us grow as young men. But, you know, I think that's the hard part a bit about being an athlete. Of course, you see the games, the exciting games. You play and you compete, but you got two road games. You're missing class. And then there's no exception because you're an athlete. Well, you missed some classes. Okay, no, you had to go to class. And Purdue's a tough academic institution. So we had to scratch and claw and to make it work. And it wasn't easy. But all those values and lessons that I learned going through that, those tough nights, studying all night, to be totally honest with you, I really enjoyed it because that means I was growing as a young man into a man. And I always liked it tough. And I've always been a guy, even to this day, when things are good and it feels good, I don't feel right. I like it rough and tough. I mean, I've always been like that. I like somewhat of a hostile environment. That way I'm aware of my surroundings and I stay on I stay on edge at all times, but when things are good, that's when I get concerned.
Is it harder today, Konzo, on today's athlete because there's so much input going into them, social media, agents, all the stuff around them, good and bad? I would think it's tougher for them to maintain the balance that you just talked about.
Well, I think what was tough about it, the difference is because it's always been tough. I just think from a social standpoint, yeah, it's out there, but what happens? They're marketing themselves. They're walking billboards when they walk out of the house, and not only that, they have the social platform. They can really market themselves, their social media page, their Twitters, their Instagram. So whatever you want people to see or read, they can put it out there before you have access to stop them, say, oh, no, that's not a good idea. It's out there. So now what I try to teach young men, I don't discourage that. What I try to do is help them understand the importance of marketing your brand, because every day you walk out of the house, you're a walking billboard. Now what do you want people to read? So for me, I don't think it's any tougher. I think what happens is if you try to study life and try to live it the right way and do right and live right, then you don't have to worry about it. Tough times will come. I don't care where you are. I don't care if you got wealth or you're poor. Tough times are tough times. It doesn't matter your level of status or how you're living. So what I tell our young guys is try to do right and try to live right every day. And that's easier said than done, but try your best to do that.
Yeah, and I think peer pressure and them hearing all this other stuff has got to be tough. And when you're 18, 19, or 20 years old, and then if you happen to be a talented player, there's talk, well, are you going to leave after your freshman year and go to the NBA? I mean, do you have to deal with all those dynamics with everybody on your roster?
Well, you have to deal with it as a head coach, because even though the title says head coach, more than anything, you're father.
Right.
You know, we can say whatever we want to say. The title says head coach, but you're father, your counselor, your teacher. And I'm all those things, and I take a tremendous amount of pride in that. Now, what I don't do, I don't hover over guys. I allow them to live their life. At least they don't think I'm hovering over them now. But we watch it all times, because I got to make sure we keep them out of harm's way, because what happens is, especially with young athletes, male or female, if something hit the paper, that perception becomes reality. So my job is to help them understand before you make that mistake, before you think about making that mistake, before you think about doing this, here are the consequences when you do that. So now, you can say, well, coach, that's boring. That lifestyle is boring. But that boring lifestyle to get you to 75 years old. It'll get you 85 years old as opposed to all of a sudden 22, you know, no longer here on this earth. So for me, it's helping them understand that a simple life is a good life, to have a peace of mind. You don't have to be all in the hustle and bustle, moving all day long, especially as an athlete, drinking and smoking and doing drugs and partying all night. That'll take a physical toll on your body, and then eventually you're no longer here.
I'm going to assume something, and if I'm wrong about it, Konzo, correct me, please. And that is, I think that your character was molded by adversity. What I mean is East St. Louis, playgrounds, troubles that could be there. And then when you got to Purdue, they told you you were not going to play because you had bad knees.
That's
and
right.
Then when you got overseas as well, in a game over there, you collapsed.
Yeah.
And you had a problem. Am I correct in that observation? That has really hardened your character?
Yes. You know, the thing with – what I've always tried to do, I try to embrace the struggles. Because when I learned, you know, with all the adversity, and I don't consider growing up in East St. Louis adversity, I thought that was a great advantage for me as a survival kid through life. That really helped me, made me a strong person. It's a beautiful place. And I think for every young male or female that's able to get out of East St. Louis to have success, and not like they're in a prison, but to have success, they really appreciate everything East St. Louis did for them, just like for me. So for me, I just try to embrace the struggles and understand all the stuff that I go through within those struggles. It'll give me the mental and the physical fibers to be tough through life and to be able to deal with anything and not really be fazed by anything. Just having cancer, that was probably the toughest thing to have. Even though I've seen a lot and I was exposed to a lot as a young guy, dealing with cancer at 26 years old was the toughest thing, only because I had no control over that situation. There was nothing I can do. In East St. Louis, there's some going on, a fight breakout, and it wasn't like I was in a lot of fights. I could control that situation. I can walk away from it. You're going into an environment, they say, that's a tough environment. You don't want to do that. Okay, I can walk away from that. But this was the first time, I had four knee surgeries. You know, go to a doctor, have surgery, okay. But this one time, I had no control over the situation. So now when the doctors start talking to me about the medicines, well, we're going to try this, we got to do this. And I just stopped him. I said, Doc, it really doesn't matter. The names of those medicines, I'll never remember. I just said, you know, do what you have to do now. And if it's God's will, then let it be.
We got about a minute and a half left before we break again. Did you ever say, why me? I don't see that as part of your makeup.
No, I didn't. I just said, you know, really, why not me? Not that I said I had to say it publicly. You know, just in going through something like that. For a while, nobody knew when I was battling cancer because I was playing in Avellino, Italy, when we came back, and nobody really knew about it. It took me about a week to tell my mom, and that was probably the toughest thing I felt like I had to do in telling my mom that I had cancer because it felt like I was letting her down. I don't know why. But it took me about a week, and my wife was just saying, you need to call your mom. You need to call your mom. I'm not going to call her. You need to call her. So finally, I called my mom, and that was so hard. Why, I don't know, but, you know, we go through things in life, and here I am, you know. It's been, I guess, 20 years later. I'm healthy, enjoying life, and I don't take life for granted because I know at any minute it can be taken from you. And I don't think going through cancer made me a better person. I just think it exposed me to what's real in life.
We got about 25 seconds. What's the best piece of advice as you were going through that you got?
Well, I think the biggest thing is have compassion for people. You never know what somebody's going through, and you hear it all the time, but just have compassion for people. Because I've seen being at what it means to be at a low point in growing up in life and not having a lot and struggling to make ends meet. I've seen that, not having lights, not having a phone, never had a car at home. So I've seen that, and that doesn't make you poor. But just having compassion for people in life because, again, you never know what somebody's going through.
Konzo Martin is with us here in the studio. Again, head basketball coach at Cal. We'll talk about him getting into coaching and what he has learned from that as well. We do that as we continue on Sports Byline. Konzo Martin is with us here on Sports Byline. We're talking about the University of California basketball program with their fine head coach, Konzo Martin. What made you wanted to go into coaching? You didn't make it, of course, in basketball as a professional player, but that's a kind of an ego-shattering situation if basketball is what your focus is. But what made you go in that direction?
For me, it was a little different because, you know, I had my first major knee surgery when I was in the ninth grade. I had two pins in my knee, a fracture in my knee. Then my second one was right after my senior year in, like, August. And I had my third one at Purdue, my fourth one, a year after college. So for me, I was just praying to God to allow me, if you will, just finish. First, it was just finish college because of the knee surgeries. Then when it got to a point where I was able to finish college, allow me to just, if anything, just hear my name get drafted. Because I had my mind mentally prepared to play in the NBA. And that was fine because with the injuries, I knew I couldn't do it for a long time. But I ended up, you know, being a part of some teams and having some fun. So for me, that was all a bonus because I knew it wouldn't last. But it was just a great honor to be a part of such a prestigious league with the best players in the world to actually be on the floor with, you know, Michael Jordan, not to play against him, but be on the floor with him, you know. but for me, again, it was all bonus because I knew it would come to an end for me, and it was such a tremendous honor.
What's the commonality that all great players at that level, the NBA level, have, like a Michael, like a Bird?
Well, I think in my favorite player growing up was Larry Bird. I think when you talk about those two guys, say for instance, there's 450 guys in the NBA. I would imagine back then it was probably 10 guys who just when they walk out of the bed, they're gifted. Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Magic, those guys, just gifted talents. Now you probably have a collection of, you know, 200-300 other guys that are great at their role, whatever their role is, they're great at it. But, you know, it's just a select few guys. It's kind of like Glenn Robinson on the college level. He was one of the best to ever do it on the college level, the way he scored the ball and the way he played. But I just think sometimes we take for granted when you say elite. Kobe Bryant is an elite talent. You know, there's a lot of pros, but he was one of the best to ever do it. And I think when you have to have – there has to be a separation when you say the best to ever do it and also great players.
Gene Katie came back into your life as a coach as well. He hires you at Purdue. And what did you learn watching him on the bench, working with him from that perspective? In other words, as an assistant coach, that was different from being a player with him.
Well, I think his ability to lead, his accountability as a coach and as a man. So when you lose tough games as a coach, you have to take ownership of things that didn't go right. We game plan here, this didn't work, so it's my fault as a coach. Not necessarily fault, but we have to do a better job. I thought Coach did a great job of holding himself accountable. And again, I didn't really understand when I was a player until I got older. But just the accountability as a coach and as a man, as a leader, that everything falls right here. You know, and when we have success, it's our team's success. And I think Coach did a great job of taking ownership of that. And I've seen a lot that they struggle with that part. It's okay to say, I struggle with that. We didn't have success here. I made a mistake as a coach. That's okay because that's growth as a man. I think what happens, then you become transparent and people want to be around a guy. Nobody wants to be around somebody that's flawless. Nobody want to be around because they know it's phony. It's not real. It's not the real world. We make a lot of mistakes, and when you make mistakes and you own up to your mistakes, people want to be around you because they know you're human.
Your big break, in a sense, was when you got the job at the University of Tennessee. And all coaches, I'm sure, do some due diligence about whether they want to take a job or not. You're smiling a little bit here. And I'm just wondering, what was your due diligence? Because they were a program that was in trouble. The NCAA had come down on them. Bruce Pearl was there. They'd gotten into trouble. And what was your thinking in taking that job?
Well, what happens is the opportunity to go from Missouri State, which was a great place, to Tennessee was a step up. So in our worlds of coaching, in our coaching profession, that was a great opportunity. So now, do you embrace the challenge, or you stay at Missouri State, or do you embrace this challenge? Because I think with anything, I've never been a guy to say, okay, I'll take this job. There's a chance that I could get fired. I've never talked in those terms or even focused like that. My job is to do a job to the best of my abilities, and then whatever happens, happens. So when I took the job, I felt like it was a great opportunity in a great league in the SEC, and a program that had a great fan base. So those are the reasons why I took the job. Obviously, you do your homework and understand success levels of different coaches that have been a part of that university and understand what you're getting yourself into.
I have had for a long time Pat Summitt as a dear, dear friend. And certainly you got to know her, too, when you were at Tennessee. And we used to have a lot of philosophical conversations over at her house. And she told me that university is different. The SEC, and you know where I'm going with this. The SEC is different. Were you prepared for what you ran into about with the fans? There was the petition that they signed wanting to bring back Bruce Pearl. I never quite understood that situation.
Well, I didn't either. But, you know, again, what happens is when you take a job, even though you develop, I have a lot of friends in Knoxville, Tennessee, a lot of wonderful people that are on the campus. So let's make that part clear. And we had a tremendous fan base. We have over 18,000 plus people. It was great. I've said often, if there's a petition, I like to see it because I like to put it in my house and put it in a trophy case. And really, I've said that several times, so hopefully somebody can get that information to me. But what happens, the truth of the matter is you hired to do a job. And I think you lose sight of the fact that you hired to do a job when you expect someone to be a friend, because it's business. And so for me, that's how I look at this business. Now, you make friends along the way, but for me, it's business. So whatever happens, happens. I have to do a job. So if I'm not doing a job to the best of my abilities, then they'll find somebody else to do the job. That part I understand everywhere I go. The most important thing for me is doing a job to the best of my abilities, making sure we help young men be successful on and off the court, not only just get jobs, but have successful careers in life and be successful men. Now, the guys that can be pros, then let's push them to be pros. And then the most important thing is my family. Every time I make a decision and talking with my wife, then we make a decision. And that is the most important thing. So when you take a job, you understand that for me, whatever the contract you sign, for me is one day at a time. And that is the most important thing.
What is the thing that is the hardest to accept when something doesn't work out anywhere at any program? Because that was the first time I think you probably had to deal with that.
Well, I think what happens is it shows you that you're human. You're not perfect, and I've never been a guy that thought I was perfect. I thought I was better than anybody else, but I like to think I work just as hard as anybody. I try to apply myself, and I try to study life and live it the right way, but it means that you're human, and that's okay. If you have struggles or things aren't going your way, that's okay, but again, that wasn't like I was playing an individual sport. I'm still coaching young men, so now they follow how I move. So now if they see coach vulnerable, coach struggling, coach is not communicating the way he was, then something's wrong. So my job is still developing young men. At that particular time, even though they're not my biological sons, they are my sons. So my job is still developing young men. So this is what we have to do. And I got to tell these guys, this is what's going on around here. This is nothing. This is life. And if you can kind of, you know, see your life through me right now, what we're going through, then you'll have a great life, because I just gave you a blueprint how to navigate through muddy waters.
Couple of people have told me that you're much more comfortable in Berkeley, California than you were down in Knoxville, Tennessee. It's more akin to your personality.
Well, what happens for me is, and again, I enjoy being at Tennessee. We have some great players. That guys are playing in the NBA and having success. We graduated 11 out of 11, so we had success. But what happens is, for me as a coach, fans have the right to do and say whatever they please. Because, and I'll say it again, because they're fans. Now, oftentimes people portray as fans and say different things. Well, they're not really fans. if you're a fan, you have to write. You paid to go to a game. That's my team. That's okay. That's fine. But what I always say, these are young men. If you're going to take any shots, take them at me as a man. That's fine. But not for the guys, because unfortunately nowadays these young guys, it's social media, so they see it and read it. And some young guys can crumble because of the information that they read. So I always try to make fans aware of the fact that if you say anything about young guys, they read that information. If you represent the university, then that young man that you represent, that same university, he reads that information, and you want him to be successful in life. They don't go hand in hand. And I try to make people understand that part.
I talked to a couple of people that I respect in college basketball, and I asked them about you, and they, both of them said to me, he has a reputation of not screwing up a kid when he gets him in his program. And I think that is a very, very high compliment. And I remember asking Mike Krzyzewski one time, I said, Mike, you have that same reputation of not screwing up a kid. What do you look for when you're recruiting? He said, when I go into a parent's home, it may be one parent, maybe two parents, I make sure I ask that parent or parents a question. And then out of the corner of my eye, I look to see whether the kid is rolling his eyes or not as his parent or parents are answering the question. I said, what does that tell you? He respects authority.
Yes.
And I thought that was an interesting insight. But you have that same reputation as well.
Well, the things that I say to a young man when I'm talking to him, because a lot of times I say, I want to be a pro, I want to be this, I want to be that. And the thing I say, are you willing to die for it? Because if you're willing to die for something, that means you lay it all on the line to do it. And that means we'll put the work in to get it done. And what I always say is, you have to trust me. You have to trust in the fact that I'll do right by you. And because what happens, mom and dad, whether it's, I've been around with just grandparents, mom, dad, might be an aunt raising a young man, whichever the case, they pass the baton. They pass it to me. I can't drop the baton. And again, when I get young guys in our program, yes, I'm the head coach and they're ball players, but this is a relationship. This is family. And the older I get, it used to be I was kind of like an uncle. Now the older I get, it's like father, you know, just, you know. So, and I have kids of my own, so the last thing I want to do is put a young man in harm's way. I want to make sure he's successful. Every young guy got to make sure he's successful, not just to say, okay, I got a degree. And because I take it a step further, let's get into class and let's get a degree where you can be successful. It might be tough, but I think you can be successful here. You got to fight through this, and it'll help you in life. So my job, again, is just asking a young man, are you willing to die for what you believe in?
Before practice starts every day for you, you have the emphasis of the day. Tell me about that.
Well, the emphasis of the day, we huddle up in the middle, and we just talk about it could be anything, but it's all is relevant. And rarely is it about basketball. You know, just life stuff, you know, having integrity, having character. Scratching and clawing for what you believe in. Do you love your teammates? Do you love your family? And again, it translates to what we do on the floor, but really what we talk about is just life stuff. And just I hit them with something, and they kind of go hand in hand. So now they know when we step on the floor, okay, there's something bigger than this actual game. Because at some point, the ball will stop bouncing. And hopefully all these guys will become husbands and fathers. And now they have to live. And what I translate that into, if you're married and something goes on in your marriage, your wife gets sick, something happened, can you still function in that environment? Can you still help your family? Or are you going to fold and give up, run away from your family? Are you going to continue to push forward and lead your family? All of a sudden, you have a successful job and the economy hits bad, you lose your job. Are you man enough to go work at a restaurant where you think it's less than you to do that restaurant? Are you man enough to do that? I said, because somebody works at a restaurant you go eat at right now. So how do you think, how you view them? And just really try to make those guys understand this is life and what goes around comes around. And I say you could be on the top as well as the bottom in a matter of seconds. And you can't take life for granted.
Certainly basketball is dominated by the African-American athlete, both at the pro level and the college level. Have you had discussions? And also, what input and response have you had from your athletes about the social and racial justice discussion that's going on in this country?
Oh, we talk about it all the time. But, you know, it's just... I wish at some point we could all sit down, meaning all, you know, people around the country and sit down, because a lot is made of Colin Kaepernick, you know, kneeling for football game. Whether you agree with that or not, okay, you agree with it or not for a day. I agree, I disagree. However you want to do that, that's one day. Now you got to say, okay, now why did he kneel? What did he do that for? Because the truth of the matter is you're talking about a situation. This just didn't happen 2 or 3 years ago. It's been going on. And if we fair across the board, it doesn't matter what my skin looks like, because we're both human. We're human beings. We have a life. We're trying to live. We're all trying to be successful. And the thing, I'll take it a step further. As an adult, you can agree or disagree, and you're kind of set in your ways, and you'll probably never change. That's fine. But let's figure out a way to help our youth all across the country, to our youth. Everybody has should have the equal level of education across the country. There should never be a kid that lacks food across the country. There should never be a kid that lacks health across the country and benefits. Every kid should have the same level of those three things across the country. So now, as an adult, if you disagree with me, you're set in your ways, you've been around for however long, you don't change, that's fine. But let's figure out a way to make change for our youth.
We've got about 20 seconds left, but what joy do you get out of coaching basketball?
I really enjoy seeing young men be successful. And I'll give you an example. Jordan McRae, who's with the Cleveland Cavaliers, he was with us at Tennessee. Now, if you just saw you just saw Jordan as a freshman at Tennessee, now, talented scorer, but I sat him on the bench, and he was our best scorer for, I think, his sophomore year. And to see him with the Cleveland Cavaliers to get a ring, and he was so emotional. He was looking for when they won the championship game. So that's why I get joy, to see young men be successful.
Gonzo, I want to thank you very much for spending the hour with us. I hope you'll come back again, because you've got some important messages to partake to people, kids particularly. You're welcome here anytime on Sports Byline.
Thank you for having me.
Fine head basketball coach at the University of California. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show.